you do not have to compromise your style just because you're a certain age. But equally, you need to show up and feel comfortable about what you're wearing, because if you feel self-conscious about it, that's just going to show through and it's going to upset your self-confidence as well.
She's bold. She's sassy. She's a woman over 50 living a life she designed on purpose with purpose. And now here's your host of Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast, Shelley Dryman.
Hey, friends. How did you like my new intro? That was my friend Leanne Bennett of Third Quarter Life who did that for me, and I think it's awesome. I will put her information down there in the show notes if you are interested in reaching out to her. My episode this week, interview with Carol Hansen, I just really had a great time talking to her, so it's going to be a smidge longer than some of the other interviews that I do. But Carol is in the UK and she left a corporate job a few years back, and she helps the type of women who say, I've got a closet full of clothes and nothing to wear. And she first starts shopping in your own closet. And the conversation went from that, you know, what she does, to when she was talking to women, a lot of the issues around was not necessarily the clothing, but women having a body confidence issue. So we talk about that a little bit. And then we also talk about fast fashion and how that is wreaking havoc on our environment and also on the women in underdeveloped third world countries. So it's just a really fascinating conversation. And we delve into so many things beyond fashion. All right, peeps, I hope you enjoy this episode with Carol. First of all, you look lovely. Love your pop of color, your turquoise there.
Of course. Need a pop of color to make my stand out.
So Carol's coming to us from the UK drinking her hot chocolate on a cold day over there. But I was so intrigued by your story because you help women define their fashion and what that's going to look like for them. But you do it in a really mission-driven, conscious way, not only for the environment and what you call fast fashion is doing to the world, but also in terms of how it helps women. So I would love for you to tell the story, and we'll just have a conversation about that.
Thank you so much for inviting me on, Shelley. Really appreciate it. So I've been running my personal styling consultancy now for about 5 years. And my tagline, if you like, is that I inspire women who have a wardrobe full of clothes but nothing to wear. And I help them to look and feel fabulous every time they get dressed. And I started my consultancy back in 2015, and I got my first styling client within about a week of me finishing my training. Well, that sounds great. It was on the back of a less successful business I was running at the time, where in 2013, I had gone out and bought a business for sale, which was an online boutique. I had no experience in fashion, e-commerce, or marketing.
Hard could it be? That was really brave of you.
It was a senior moment. It certainly was. But it also showed as well how unhappy I was in my corporate role at the time, that I just wanted to get out there and do something like that. But as I started to run the business on a full-time basis, I started to realize that how difficult it was to make it work. But more importantly than that, as I marketed the business offline as well as online, so I went out, I put on fashion shows, events, and so on, is I was attracting women who wanted to talk to me, not in terms of buying clothes, but in terms of the fact that clothes, they weren't right for the clothes. Now, when you translated that down the line, so much of it came back down to body confidence and not being confident about understanding what worked for them, being confident about their bodies in general. So I started to do a bit of research, and my research showed that, in fact, 97% of women have body confidence issues. And to me, that was one hell of a number. You know, that could go from anything, from having a day where you're not feeling too good about yourself, you may be feeling a bit bloated or something like that, through to full-blown eating disorders. And it was a revelation to me as well, because I had suffered from my own problems with eating disorders for over 20 years. And I'd thought I was in a kind of minority. Well, yes, I probably was in the fact that I got a full-blown eating disorder, but I thought I was in a minority about how the way I felt about my body. And it was only speaking to these women that I realized just how many women suffered from problems. And so that's why I then trained as a personal stylist, because I thought if I can guide them through the jungle as to what works for them and what doesn't work for them and hold their hands on that, then I will then be able to sell the clothes that I've got in stock. Unfortunately, it didn't work like that, because the women I was attracting for styling weren't right for the clothes that I'd got in stock anyway. So that's by the by. The boutique went by the by. But it taught me so much, and it got me into what I'm doing now. So I don't regret the fact that I went that route at all. It was only, I guess, probably 2018. I've never been big on buying lots of clothes or having lots of clothes. And I think as I've worked with clients, it's made me appreciate even more how quality is so much better than quantity. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, my own attitudes and the way that I was brought up was that you looked after your clothes and you saved up to get clothes. Mm-hmm. They weren't just available on demand as they are now. And they weren't cheap enough either for us to be able to do that. You couldn't help but, you know, you needed to save up the stuff. This whole concept of fashion and buying lots of clothes and turning them around really quickly just didn't sit well with me. And I was never great at taking people personal shopping. And it was partly for those reasons. And it was also a commercial reason that it's very difficult to make revenue back on a shopping trip because of how much time you invest on doing the research to start with. But more importantly, it just wasn't, so many women have got so many clothes in their wardrobe they don't wear. Okay, not everything's going to be right for them, but there's an awful lot there that we can make right for them by accessorizing, by styling properly, that why go out there consuming more? And so I then started to get more woke, if you like, which is the kind of the term used these days, and started doing my own research into how bad things were in the fashion industry. And quite frankly, it brought me right down from a mood perspective, because it just frightened the hell out of me how we were damaging the environment, right through from growing cotton to, you know, the amount of carbon that gets used when we're flying goods all over the world, all the pollutants that take place in the process as well, the exploitation of people in the garment industry, and that is largely women who are employed in the garment industry, and just our consumption, and then how we waste fashion, how we wear something for a few times and then we get rid of it. And none of this sat well with me. And I started kind of talking about it a little bit, and then I realized, hang on, there's an awful lot of people don't understand how bad it is. So I decided to educate myself enough to get ahead of the game to be able to help my tribe. And that's really is my passion now. So someone asked me to take them shopping. Yeah, we'll go shopping, but we go shopping in your wardrobe. And we identify what you've got first before we even think about shopping. And when you do, if you do go shopping, then I've got certain principles that I'd like you to think about in terms of shopping consciously, maybe shopping from pre-loved or thrift stores, or just buying quality sustainable clothes. And even that's a bit of a minefield as to what's truly sustainable and what we're being greenwashed about, where brands are jumping onto the sustainability trend. It's about understanding so that you can make informed choices. So I take people on a journey when I work with them, and I work largely with women. I do work with men as well, but it's largely with women. And the journey I take them on is, first of all, to help them understand who they are and how they want to show up in the world, because clothes are such a great communicator for us. And then we start also from a position of love. So many people are very negative about their bodies, as I've said. So I always ask the clients that I'm working with to identify what bits of their body do they love. We may find that a woman can only come up with the idea that she loves her eyes, for example. So I show her what colours are going to make her eyes stand out and sparkle, what necklines will help draw attention to her eyes, what accessories will work to draw out the colour of her eyes. So that we're starting from that position of love, and we then look at how we cover up the bit she's not so keen on. And I also work with people, one of the first questions I ask is, what's your favourite outfit? And I help them to identify what it is with that favourite outfit that makes it favourite.
Oh,
is it that they get lots of compliments when they're wearing it? Is it that they make them feel good? Is it the colour that really lights them up? Is it the style, the finish? Whatever it is. So that when they're thinking about their wardrobes going forward, and particularly if they need to replenish their wardrobes, because let's face it, we do at points, they can understand what it is that really lights them up, and that they're not making buying mistakes, and therefore they're not over-consuming. They're not buying things that you then go and take out your wardrobe, you go and put on, and you go, taking that off again because it doesn't work, but I don't understand why it doesn't work.
Yeah. So many questions for you. First of all, I do have one sort of silly question.
There are no silly questions, Shelley. There are no silly questions.
Well, there's a show here in that was on for several years in the States. I don't know if you guys got it over there in the UK, but it was called What Not to Wear.
Okay, yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah. What do you just curious what that popped into my head? What do you think of that show in terms of?
I haven't actually watched it. I'm sorry.
No worries. It just popped into my head. They ambush people who are, you know, who wear like sweats out in public and pajamas out in public, and then they take them shopping. But they do talk a lot about their body and not buying cheap clothes and stuff like that. So I was just curious.
That side of it's great, but and I'm presuming that when they ambush people that it's and talk about those kind of things, it's pre-planned out. What my take on that is not to be dictatorial about what people wear, but is to understand why they like wearing that or why they wear that.
Yeah.
You know, there can be a multitude of reasons. It can be just comfort. It could be practical. It could be that they really don't like their bodies they're covering up. They're not sure what suits them. They've maybe gone through some kind of lifestyle change, and that could be particularly the types of women I work with, which are largely women between 40 and 65. Mm-hmm. So it could be menopause, body shape change. It could be relationship breakdown. It could be bereavement. It could be kids leaving home, all of which can create an identity crisis. And maybe putting those pajamas on, just as using that as an example, and going outside may just be their way of saying help. And I'm really not sure how to deal with things anymore.
Yeah. I love how you put that, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, what body conditions, what causes that? You know, when you said 97% of women suffer from some sort of body confidence issue. But it's so true, because I was thin until I hit 50. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, what the hell? It seems like I can't do anything right. So I love how you say it goes beyond the typical of sometimes of what we think. And it's also relationship changes and things that occur in everyone over 50. What you talked about, all women over 50 go through something like that.
Yeah.
You and I were talking before the recording, and I had just finished watching some documentary on Netflix. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but it was about minimalism. And there was a professor of sociology or something on there that talked, and I can't remember her name, but she talked about how, and this brought up that whole like Stitch Fix thing and all that, where you can buy clothes every month. And I'm thinking, I wear the same five outfits every day of the week. I mean, at work, I like what I wear. I have like winter clothes. I have summer clothes, but I wear the same five things every week, and no one ever says anything to me about it. But I'm thinking, what would I do with a box of clothes every month? I just don't understand that whole idea of that. But she talks about lots of things, but in particular clothing is buying this fast fashion, as you've talked about in the thing that you sent me. It's buying crap, and it has no social benefit.
Absolutely. This has come very much from our have it now culture that we have now. I mean, about 20 years ago when fast fashion really started to take off, partly the internet, partly just the speed, being able to manufacture at speed. And a lot of it started with seeing stuff on the runways or at red carpet events. And then fashion manufacturers, garment manufacturers going, right, okay, we can replicate that. We can turn that round really quickly, get it out onto the market. And you've got this whole celebrity culture that started up, which just makes me cringe, frankly. The fact that we feel that we have to dress like celebrities. And if we dress like celebrities, then we're going to have celebrity lives. Bullshit. It just doesn't work.
I'll drink to that.
Exactly. And then pile on top of that in the last decade, social media and the whole pressure within social media, not just bloggers and influencers, but even peer pressure to keep, and particularly on the younger generation, to keep changing that look and to keep having a different look. Because if you're going to keep posting selfies of yourself all over social media, you can't be wearing the same thing. Well, again, I'm sorry, that's bullshit.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because I'm actually doing three interviews today plus a live. And I thought, do I need to change my shirt? And I'm like,
No, absolutely not.
You change my shirt.
That whole approach is starting to change gradually into the fact that people have got actually more time for people that are not doing this whole multiple changes and so on and so forth, and are actually wearing clothes for longer.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you've got a series of interviews today, you're doing them all in one day. You're not going to change your outfit several times. So this whole thing with fast fashion, and then of course with the internet retail being able to turn outfits around really quickly, not just from the point of design manufacture, but in terms of getting collections out there. So they've always got something new to sell. I mean, some of the online stores and even some of the high street stores as well, offline stores, they have up to 50 collections a year.
Wow.
50 mini collections. And you think about that.
That's a collection a week.
Yeah. And you think about that versus how it used to be, go back 30, 40 years, you had seasons, didn't you? You had like an autumn, winter and a spring, summer season.
Yeah.
And those clothes stayed in the store throughout those periods. Mm-hmm. But now, with this pressure to keep having new, which is coming partly from, it's coming at both ends. So the consumers are reacting to the retailers creating collections, and the retailers are reacting to consumers buying those collections.
Well, yeah, supply and demand. If we're going to buy it, they're going to produce it.
Absolutely.
So could you?
But the problem is, we're running out of resources, and then this whole thing that we just buy something, we wear it once, and then we throw it away or do something with it. It's just it's awful. And recycling, in a sense, hasn't helped us in one way, because we think that by donating something we have charity stores rather than thrift stores over here in the UK. So we think that by donating something to a charity store, in a sense, it's, well, great, someone else is going to get the benefit of that. They're going to wear it. Over here in the UK, I don't know what the stats are in the States, 10 to 30% only get sold through that store. So that is up to 90% doesn't. Mm-hmm. So in that 90%, what happens to it? Well, it's sold off. The charity still benefits from it because it's sold off to wholesalers. Who then, and America is equally culpable in this. We then ship it offshore. So as far as the UK goes, a lot of it goes to East Africa.
That's how it is here in the States too. That's exactly what they do. Yeah.
And when it goes into East Africa, of course, East Africa consumers are going, oh, great, we can get our hands on cheap Western clothing.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is it's destroying local markets. So you've got local cotton producers, local textile designers, all kinds of that. They cannot compete with the fast fashion. So we're just saying, okay, well, we're going to offload the stuff we no longer want and give it out to a third world country or developing country.
You know,
again, it's not sustainable.
You know, I don't think a lot of people, and myself included, until a few years ago, truly understand what our consumer society, how that affects the rest of the world.
I agree.
You know,
I'm absolutely with you on that. I mean, as I said, it was probably 2018 when I really started to sit up and take notice and start digging into this and understand what on earth is going on.
Yeah. And could you just talk briefly about also the effects it has on women in particular in these underdeveloped countries who are producing these clothes that we wear.
I don't know whether you remember, but there was a big factory disaster in 2013 called Rana Plaza. Mm-hmm. And this was tragic, where a factory collapsed. It was in such disrepair. And 1,138 garment workers were killed. And over 2,000, I think it was 2,500 thereabouts, were injured. As a result of that, the fashion industry started to get a bit more aware of what was going on, particularly as it was shown on news reports and so on, that there were brands like Primark, I don't know which American brands were involved, but there were brands like Primark were using those factories to manufacture. And all of a sudden, people started to go, whoa, we didn't realize our clothes were being manufactured in those poor conditions. Everyone thinks that Rana Plaza is kind of, you know, it's nearly 7 years ago. Many of those people involved, either relatives of bereaved or the people who were injured, are still waiting compensation.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because they don't have the systems or the money that we have in countries like the US or like the UK, mm-hmm. to be able to put together petitions and claims and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't have the state kind of subsidy that would come out in the UK if the private enterprise didn't pay out for that. So there's that side of it. What it kind of started to reveal was that Rana Plaza is not an isolated incident. There are still so many garment factories out there where I think it's about 86%, I can't remember exactly, but it's definitely over 80, of the workers are female. Mm-hmm. And that very often they are working in not great conditions, to say the least of it. They, you know, it's not like here where you would have like workplace assessments for health and safety. You'd have someone coming in, checking your machines, checking the posture of your seat and so on. You have women that are really suffering health problems because they're constantly spending hours mm-hmm. and hours bent over machines in the wrong position, wrong postures. It's very often the only work that they can get. So they're forced into it in many situations where they can't do anything. They're underpaid. They're not paid a decent living wage. They also work appallingly long hours. They're not treated in many cases with respect and dignity. And it's just awful. Fashion Revolution, which was a charity sort of or campaign group, it started off over here in the UK, started shouting out about this after Rana Plaza. They started to really come up and become much more aware. And with all the campaigning and work that they've done, they've created an awful lot more awareness of this. But sadly, although it is a lot in developing countries, it's not just in developing countries. Over here in the UK, for example, there was a report done by a government committee. It was published early last year. They actually exposed that we've still got parts of the UK where women are not being treated properly within the garment industry. They're not being paid fair wages. They're not working to proper contracts. And it named some retailers that were buying from these or commissioning these factories to work. So it's not isolated. Frankly, it just shouldn't be happening. It's not only just within the garment manufacturer either. It's also to do with textiles in terms of people that are exposed to chemicals and pollutants, particularly within dyeing. And then obviously with these big factories, they've got to get rid of this, the waste somehow. It ends up going into water supply. So whole communities can get damaged, let alone the environment.
Yeah.
And so much of this is because our consumptive behavior that we've got into this habit, say, of just by, as you say, supply and demand.
Well, you know, one of the things I want to say to this, I'm sort of aware of, you know, those things, not to the extent that you are. But first of all, I want to say, you know, thank you for using your voice to not only help women in fashion, but do it in a mission-driven, conscious way that's very thoughtful. But, you know, I did an interview with a woman not too long ago, and one of the things that she said is that we, women over 50, first of all, there's a lot of us. You know, we can definitely use our voice to make a thoughtful change in, if not in our world, at least in our own little community that we live in.
Absolutely.
But we have the life experience, we have the knowledge, we have the wisdom to use our voices to take a stance on something that we feel is important. So I really appreciate you doing that. And this has just been a really eye-opening, fascinating conversation. And I hope women who are listening still love their clothes. I want you to love your clothes. No one's judging you for loving your clothes. But to, you know, listen to what Carol is saying and then also think about how you consume those things in your life. So before we head off, Carol, I'm going to, you had put something in your email to me that I thought was kind of interesting. The things that you've learned on your journey. So if we could just talk briefly about those for a couple of minutes. The first thing you said, age is just a number.
Yeah.
It's not just a number on your birth certificate.
It's just a number on a birth certificate.
That's right. I can't read my own writing.
Don't worry about it, Shelley. Yeah, I mean, my smile icon, and a lot of your ladies who are listening to this will be able to identify Iris, is Iris Apfel, who is American lady. She's in her 90s. She was an interior designer until in her 80s, she became a style icon. And
I think I know who you're talking about.
Great glasses,
yeah.
Enormous chunky accessories, beautiful.
Yeah.
She wears very flamboyant clothes. She breaks every style rule in the book, if you think there are style rules, but she has the confidence to carry it off. And she has, pardon me, she has that approach that age is just a number on a birth certificate. And I absolutely detest articles that you see in the media that say 25 items you should have in your wardrobe.
Oh, no.
At a certain age. 25 you can't have in your wardrobe.
Those damn listicles. I hate those.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
And how I illustrate this is, take for example, animal print. I mean, I'm wearing animal print at the moment. Some women don't feel comfortable wearing, they love animal print, but they don't feel comfortable wearing it as they get a bit older. They feel it's too much for them. So my attitude on it is, well, don't wear a full top or anything in animal print. Go and get a scarf or a handbag or something. You do not have to compromise your style just because you're a certain age. But equally, you need to show up and feel comfortable about what you're wearing, because if you feel self-conscious about it, that's just going to show through and it's going to upset your self-confidence as well. So that's my approach, is you don't have to give anything up, but you do need to feel comfortable about what you're wearing.
And also the women over 50, a life redesign is basically women over 50. So going through, you know, trying to figure out, and I'm in that phase too, you know, I'm 57 and a half. So trying to figure out what I'm going to do in my professional life. I don't want to continue, you know, doing what I'm doing for the rest of my life. But we don't want to quit working, for lack of a better word. So you say 52 is a good age to launch a business.
Absolutely. And that was the age I was when I bought this online boutique. Uh-huh. And my history, which I'll talk about just a little bit in a minute, but my history meant that I'd been in employment in the 1990s. I had my first business. I then went back into corporate. But come 2013, I'd had enough of corporate. But I wanted to carry on working. And I looked around for a business to buy, because I felt that I wanted to carry on working, but I wanted to do it on my terms. And the entrepreneurial community is growing so much, and the work community is also changing so much, that I didn't want to go and carry on being an employee. I wanted I wanted to have that control back, and I wanted to design my own life. And that's why I say it's about, you're right. I mean, in the 50s, we don't want to necessarily carry on. We don't want to give up working, but we don't want to carry on being a wage slave. Mm-hmm. And it's about thinking about what it is that you want. I mean, there's so many of us are not going to be retiring at 60 or 65. You know, we are a generation that is much younger than our parents' generation. I certainly feel that when I look back at where my parents were at the same age, and I think, whoa, hang on, you know, that they'd kind of been thinking about how they were going to start pottering around in their gardens and taking nice breaks, which is great for that generation, but that's not our generation. Our generation is both for financial reasons, because we may not have the pensions to be able to just give up work. But also from, you know, the fact that we're much healthier, we're much more mentally alert in many respects, and physically we're a lot more able, we want to carry on working and doing stuff and finding things that are fulfilling. And it is so important.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I know it's sort of like this. I was raised by my mother worked, but I was raised by a woman who she retired at like 62 and died a year later. You know, yeah. So she worked her entire life, and that's just what you did. And then she retired and she sat down on the couch and she never got back up again. So, you know, we're raised by that mindset. But then you're coming into this new world that you talk about where we have all these possibilities.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it's difficult for us because we're like, oh, this is how we were raised, but this is what I see. So just breaking through that mindset. And I think at 50 it's the perfect time to do that.
A mindset is the key.
Personally.
Because it's about having that positive mindset.
Yeah.
And also realizing that even if you do go out and do something different, again, it's not forever. And you can make changes. I mean, as I said, I bought the boutique, it didn't work. I moved on and switched the business around. So nothing is set in stone. You can get out there and do it in the way that you want to and on your terms.
I think that's a good point. But the thing is, you just have to do it. So one more thing real quickly here is that you said you felt like you wasted your 20s and 30s. And I think almost everybody I know my age feels like they wasted their 20s and 30s. What would you say to the women who feel that way right now?
I would say, don't worry about it. I mean, for my own case, I was going through an eating disorder in my 20s and 30s, and it affected every part of my life, physical, mental, my relationships, my social skills and ability, and also my career, because I wasn't in a position where I was confident enough to put myself out there. And that's why I was originally an accountant, and that's why I stayed in that kind of back office environment, at least through my 20s. When it got to my 30s, I still feel like, retrospect, I wasted it, but that was in kind of different ways. But I was able to put a brash face on it, but I still felt I wasted my 30s, even though I was running my first business then, because I didn't really have the concept of what it was I really wanted. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is kind of run with it to a degree, but I do really believe, and I think we've got much more scope for doing this now, is to sit and think about what it is you really want so you can start to put those plans in place. You know, you see there's so many more coaches available now in terms of talking. There's so much more information available that you can start to really think about what it is you want, and to plan out what it is you want, and to start designing that life that you do want before you hit your 50s.
Exactly.
If that's what you want.
I have a really good friend who's actually quite a bit younger than I am. She's 46 this year. She quit her job. She just quit. She said, I've had it with you people. I'm out of here. And so she's going to school to be a dental hygienist. And I said, why a dental hygienist? And she said, well, I got online and looked at careers for women over 40, and I'm very social and I like teeth. So she was like, I'm going to give that a try. So, but you know, the whole thing is, yes, figure out what you want to do. I'm sure she put a lot more thought into it than that. Sure. But you know, the whole point is just to figure out what you want to do, and then you have to do it.
So. Exactly. And it's about getting in that right mindset. And as I say, it's also having the mindset that nothing's forever. Either.
Exactly.
Because, and again, that's partly generational, isn't it? Because certainly the environment that I was raised in, it was kind of, you started off, as I said, I started off, I fell into accountancy. It wasn't planned, but it was kind of, you were then had that label of an accountant.
Yeah.
And like my father was a salesman, and he had that salesman label right through his life.
Yeah. I get that. My background's in social work, and I've been a do-gooder my entire life. And not that I don't still believe in the tenets of social work and all that, but I'm tired of being a social worker. I'm ready. I'm ready to move on to other things.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Well, because that must be so traumatic at times.
Well, right now, I'm in fund development, so I ask people for money all day long is typically what I do in my other world when I'm not interviewing lovely ladies like you on my podcast. But hey, Carol, this has been such a great conversation. I have absolutely loved it. So thank you so much.
I've loved talking to you, Shelley.
Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Shelley today on Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast. Be sure to join the ever-growing community of like-minded women on Facebook. That's the Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned Facebook group. Join today.